because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at events in the Capitol, but more importantly, on the political campaign trail. J.R., let's talk about the opposites in Donald Trump and Paul Ryan. Now, much of this happened early last week. Remember, in the wake of the locker room tapes, Mr. Ryan, Speaker Ryan, disinvited Mr. Trump from the Fall Fest, Walworth County Fairgrounds, and then he gets on the phone with his caucus, and he says, "I'm not going to campaign for Trump with Trump. You do what you have to do."
Yes.
And then that night, Mr. Trump says, "I don't want Paul Ryan's support. I don't care about his support. What I want to do is I want to win for the people." And he says he's unshackled of having to play nice with party leaders like Mr. Ryan. So do you have here, well, if I'm stealing a phrase, I don't know who I'm stealing it from, a battle for the soul of who's going to lead the GOP party?
We have a couple things going on. One, Ryan and Trump have a tortured relationship. If you go back to the spring, you remember, Trump had all but sent up the nomination, and Ryan said, "I'm not ready to endorse this guy. I want to hear more from him." And that was the first kind of like flare-up we saw where Trump kind of gave it to him. Then Ryan kind of came along reluctantly and said, "Well, I'm going to support him. He's also chair of the National Convention." Kind of tough to chair the convention, not support the nominee. And at times, though, he would kind of criticize Trump over what he said, the things that were more the offensive things for Ryan.
Yeah.
So we went through that whole process, but this seems to be the point where Ryan said enough. Because his comment, you know, Friday night was he was sickened by what he saw on the videotape or heard on the videotape, and that this is kind of like too much. You know, he should really reflect on these comments. So that's going on. What's interesting, though, is that there seems to be a disconnect between the leadership of the Republican Party nationally and this base that supports Donald Trump. You saw a little bit at Fall Fest on Saturday in Walworth County where there were Trump supporters came and heckled Ryan. Now, this is like golden boy Paul Ryan
also
in his home district.
Also heckled Congressman Sensenbrenner, excuse me.
Interrupted him several times, and Sensenbrenner like chided and let him speak. You know, but you're seeing that there is a populist base in the Republican Party right now that doesn't care about Paul Ryan's ideal of like, let's have a better way, you know, the path that they laid out for House Republicans. Let's have a high-minded conversation about our ideas.
Right.
It's more of a passionate group saying, the heck with all you guys, we're going to burn the place down. And how do you manage that if you're Paul Ryan with where you're at versus where that base is at right now?
And then yesterday at the Waukesha County GOP Business Council, Mr. Ryan was supposed to take questions, and news organizations were waiting. He took no questions.
Nope.
So he is in the I'm not going to say the T word phase right now, isn't he?
For the most part. And then, you know, any minute now he'll be starting to speak to college Republicans.
Yes.
Going to lay out his vision of why liberalism has failed, liberal progressive has failed in this country, and the ideas that he wants to put forward. He's trying to direct the party in this kind of idea-based operation. Trump is a passion-based operation, and those things are not mixing right now.
Right, very true. But meanwhile, okay, I'm really struck over 10 days. Last Saturday, Mr. Trump was supposed to appear at Fall Fest with Governor Walker, Ron Johnson, and Paul Ryan.
First time they're going to be on the stage together all at one time.
Right. So let's fast forward to this Monday when Mr. Trump is going to be in Green Bay and West Dallas. And who's going to be on the stage with him?
As far as I know, not a lot of people. At least among elected Republicans in Wisconsin.
Not Governor Walker.
No. He's going to be in New Jersey for a GOPAC event. Johnson has prior commitments. Mike Gallagher up in the 8th Congressional District running for open seat has got debate prep for an event that night because the Green Bay event's at 4 o'clock.
Yep.
You get on the list of high-profile Republicans in Wisconsin, and they're not going to be there.
Yeah.
Now, that also gets to an issue for Republicans generally of they're walking this kind of tightrope with Donald Trump where they realize where the base kind of is right now. But they also realize the voters in the middle, they're having a hard time with this guy. And so what poison pill do you pick? Do you pick irritating part of your base and say, look, you know, they'll come back eventually? Or do you possibly take a hit with the voters in the middle who you may need in a statewide election someday?
Yeah, that's a very good analysis. So it then fell to reporters like us to ask the state's leading Republicans, are you still with Mr. Trump? And I just want to survey their answers. Sean Duffy, I never endorsed Donald Trump because of his stance on women or his family or his family values. I endorsed him for his policies. as a Republican and a conservative, and this is key, JR, where else do I have to go? Mm-hmm. And Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, I'm still supporting Donald Trump, the RNC, led by Reince Priebus. Wisconsin, ran for the Wisconsin State Senate mm-hmm. before he went off to do Washington. And Congressman Grothman didn't say Mr. Trump's name, but said, I'm not prepared to have four more years of open borders, four more years of overregulation of industry, and four more years of spiraling welfare rolls. And then you have the dean of our congressional delegation, Congressman Sensenbrenner. Mr. Trump is an imperfect nominee, but Hillary Clinton is a bet America cannot afford to make. Any of these answers surprise you?
No, and again, it's that dance we're trying to do with Trump. And like Ryan, for months, has been making this out to be, it's a choice between two people. I can pick Hillary Clinton or I can pick Donald Trump. Donald Trump, Ryan would say, is the best path to having my ideas implemented. Hillary Clinton is not going to work with me on the things that I want to do. So they've couched it as such, but now it's harder, harder for them because Trump's making it harder. And Democrats are going to say, okay, well, you guys are with Trump. Why? Why was it, why was it when he's talked about a judge's Mexican heritage that he couldn't sit on a case? Why was that not enough? Why was, any pick out the gold star, go down the list of what he said. Why was that? Why is this too much? Why have you finally said enough now? And oh, by the way, you guys who the tape was a problem, why aren't you banning him now that there are all these women coming forward saying he groped me, he inappropriately touched me, he kissed me without my kiss? All these things. When is enough enough? And you're going to hear this refrain from Democrats over and over. And oh, by the way, and Mike Gallagher, who's not going to that event on Monday.
In Green Bay.
Tom Nelson, who we believe is trailing in the polls up there and having his kind of uphill fight right now. He was on the first ball of the gate with a TV ad saying, Mike Gallagher says we have to support Trump. No, you don't. Will you see more of that? I'm going to bet you will.
Well, I want to apologize in advance if I missed something. Has Governor Walker responded? Why has he not said anything about whether he's still with Mr. Trump? Did I miss his response, JR?
His campaign has not commented publicly about whether he's still with Trump. He sent out a tweet late Friday, kind of bashing the comments. But Scott Walker has ambitions beyond Wisconsin.
Yes.
And that is that dance we talked about. What's the stain going to be after this? Now, let's assume the polls are right, just for a second. Let's assume the national narrative that Donald Trump's campaign is in deep trouble and is going to lose it in 3.5 weeks is correct. If you're a Republican who has ambitions for the presidency, where do you want to be after November 8th? Do you want to be lined up with the Trump base, with the establishment? Where do you want to be? And that's a tough choice because there are all these downfalls. No matter which way you go, there's a downfall if you're a Republican with national aspirations.
Let's talk now about the Charles Franklin poll done for MU Law School. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's first talk about the overall. Clinton widened her lead. Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, 44%, Mr. Trump, 37%, Libertarian Gary Johnson, 9%, Green Party candidate Jill Stein, 3%. So you have some growth on the part of Clinton putting some additional distance. Mm-hmm. I think she's up 2 or 3 points from the last poll.
In a four-way race last time, 3 weeks earlier, it was 3 points.
Thank you very much. And then you have, but however, while Democratic Clinton is widening her lead, Republican incumbent U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is tightening it because the latest Charles Franken poll, 46% Feingold, 44% Johnson, 4% the Libertarian candidate Anderson, which is a complete margin of error.
Yeah. Let's separate the two. What's interesting is Charles Franken directs the poll in his presentation on Wednesday. He released his dailies, which is very unusual, by the way,
yep,
when I talked to people this week. But he released showing what Thursday looked like, what Friday looked like, and then Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah,
now, the caveat is there's a huge margin for error. We're talking 6 to 8 points, roughly,
yep,
on those 3 days, those Thursday, Friday, then Saturday, Sunday. The first day of the polls in the field, when the bulk, I mean like 45% of the surveys were done, Trump and Clinton were about even. He was actually up, a point.
1%.
But again, margin, well within the margin of error. Friday, you saw a drop, and then cratering on Saturday and Sunday. Now, there are a couple caveats here. One, we didn't have the poll go through this debate Sunday night. There was some evidence that Republicans who were real skittish after Friday,
right,
said, okay, he stabilized from that debate performance. He's apologized. We can move
Mr.
on.
Mr. Trump shored up his base is their perception.
We also don't know what happened from the kind of the outpouring of allegations from Monday through today or moment coming forward. We don't see that effect yet. So is there a continuing cratering? Is he stabilizing? That's the caveat we don't know.
Okay. Now let's talk about why do you think Mr. Johnson now is in a margin of error race with Mr. Feingold.
What Franklin talked about was that if you look at Johnson's numbers, his negatives went down, or his positives went up and his negatives went down. You add that, and then you get the tightening of the race. Now, it's interesting, as this poll was taken after Johnson started a couple of positive TV ads talking about the Joseph Project, which connects people in inner city Milwaukee with jobs, outside the city sometimes.
Yes.
A positive bio spot about helping a family in Green Bay completed adoption of a child from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the first negative ad he's done against Feingold, we also saw an outside group hit Feingold late-term abortion. So are those things helping to move his numbers? That poll suggests it is. Now, a couple caveats. Every poll has its flaws, all right? And any poll you see, watch the trends. The trend there is good for Johnson. It gives him an opportunity to go out to the national public and say, hey, you guys gave up on me, but look, I'm down 2 points in the gold standard poll in Wisconsin. I've got all this stuff going on. We've got good money in the bank. You should come in here and invest. This is a real race. We haven't really seen an influx of cash, though. The Club for Growth Action came in this week with a $750,000 TV buy, which over 2 weeks, it's decent, but that's not take the paint off a house kind of an ad, all right? Not going to saturate the airwaves. But it gives Johnson an argument to make of, hey, I've got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats would tell you that their polling shows a different race. Yes, it's tightening, but Feingold's up comfortably. And it's an interesting caveat that if you're a geek about polling like I am, Charles Franklin's polls nail it on the last poll before every election has been almost dead on the numbers.
Yes.
Almost every second-to-last poll he's done has had a blip. In 2014, Governor Walker and Mary Burke were tied at 47%. Second-to-last poll, up by 7. The next poll, won by almost 6. 2012, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. It was a 1-point race, second-to-last poll. I think Obama's up by 8 the next one, 1 by 7. Is that just a coincidence? Who knows? But it's a caveat to the next poll is going to be the one that usually gets it on the numbers. So even if that one, you know, quote-unquote corrects or is a better screen for likely voters or whatever happens, what's interesting is Johnson has a window now to weigh the wrong saying, look, this is a race, come here. We're in this thing.
Okay, but today you reported that Feingold is playing offense with a new digital ad, which quotes Mr. Trump in the last debate saying, locker room talk, and then a Johnson actuality. I am in total agreement with Mr. Trump. Pretty damaging.
Well, what we're
in the wake of this national dialogue?
What we're trying to figure out is there going to be a down ballot effect from Donald Trump? Assuming, again, that this trend continues where he's having problems, that his campaign can't get his legs out underneath it and stabilize things, okay? We've seen evidence nationally that in other Senate races, Trump is not killing these guys out in New Hampshire and Pennsylvania and Florida. He's facing deficits, but the Senate Republican is doing better than he is.
And there's still a dead eat in Ohio, but yeah. Senator Portman 18%, heard on CNN today.
So there's an argument from Republicans that there is a disassociation between Trump and the Republican Party where voters see Trump as a party of one.
Mm-hmm.
Also possibly that voters want a check on a President Clinton, so they're going to vote for a Republican to try and keep that balance. Now, the other thing about the Marquette polls we haven't seen, again, is there a continuing trend of more fallout. If, you know, if Johnson's Feingold, if Trump is like down 3-4 points, okay, you know, there's a way to overcome that mountain. If it's 7, 8, 9, 10, that's mm-hmm. a much harder hill to climb. We don't have a recent history of ticket splitting top of the race. Maybe it changes this one, but go back to 12 and 10 and look at the presidential race in 12 and the Senate race, the governor's race in 10 and the Senate race. They are almost dead even.
And didn't we have a Loris College poll that showed Johnson ahead? Yeah.
Poll out over the weekend had 3 points, so it all combines for Johnson. The uptick for Johnson is this is a good time to say, hey, I'm in this thing.
Before we go deeper into the Franklin poll, let's note that the governor's approval rating hit 44%.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked Mr. Franklin, when's the last time that the governor approval rating of 44%, he said October of 2014. So any significance there? He went from like 43 to 44?
Possibly. You know, it's small. There are small movements. It's interesting, too, that Franklin also pointed out, and has the last couple of times, that his last four polls have had a more Republican lean to them among the respondents than what he's had historically. Now, that could just be the environment. It could be a realignment in Wisconsin among voters. Who knows what it is? But it's just an interesting to note that compared to that is long-term average, a little bit more Republican sample. So maybe that's influencing the numbers too. We won't know until the election day.
Okay, now I want to dive into something that you just alluded to. It is rare for a pollster to release results on a Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday. Because for the first time, Trump was leading 41-40 on Thursday, although that's margin of error, correct?
Yes.
And then he walks us through the drop among support men, all likely voters, the drop among women, independents. We have these numbers. And by the way, when you look at what Franklin calls Protestant evangelicals, Trump support among Protestant evangelicals, and that is Charles Franklin's term, it's not mine, was off 17 percentage points Thursday through. And now among Protestant evangelicals, Clinton 31, Trump 47%, which is a margin of 16 percentage points. But I had a Republican power broker tell me yesterday, J.R., over coffee, Mr. Franklin should have suspended the poll because of this major news development of the locker room tapes. And the same Republican said these numbers are worthless because any pollster with Charles's national standing should have known that this is an aberration. You don't poll for a couple days and then you go back in. How do you feel about that argument?
It's a good question, because if you look at the course of this campaign, at what point do you say that was the event that was over the top? I mean, in the past week, we've seen Donald Trump talk about being unshackled, attacking Paul Ryan a number of times. You know, the allegations for women, at what point does this thing stabilize? It's safe to go back in the field then? That's a good question.
Well, why is Mr. Trump coming to two places in Wisconsin on Monday? Because we're still in play. Now, they've pulled out of Virginia, which is 14 electoral college votes. We offer 10. So he still hopes to get the 270 nationally in
the electoral
college.
He's still looking for a path. I had a Republican tell me just this morning that they're polling before the tape, had it within a couple of points in Wisconsin at the presidential level. So they were saying that before this, there was a path. Now, is there afterward? Who knows? Okay. What's the effect going to be? But for him, if you're looking at how do we get to 270 for Donald Trump, you need to win a Nevada. You know, you need to win a place like Ohio, a Florida. But Wisconsin at 10 electoral votes.
Even Iowa.
Iowa. It depends on what's going on. I mean, these polls are all over the map now because you see these wild swings going on with the allegations. Where do you get to 270? Maybe we're part of his mix. And maybe he has other options. In Pennsylvania is not coming home to him. It's been a consistent Clinton lead. Virginia never materialized for them. That's why they pulled out. He's got to win a North Carolina, a Florida. And let's be honest, I mean, when we first started doing this, would you ever imagine North Carolina being a swing state in a presidential race? That's almost, even 16 years ago, incomprehensible to me.
Well, you want to talk about that? Let's talk about Utah. But I want to go deeper in the crosstabs here, the daily crosstabs. Just one more point. I think the biggest thing that has surprised me is the drop among independents. Mr. Trump went from 32% on a Thursday to 25% on a weekend. Of all these categories that Mr. Franklin gave us, men, likely voters, women, independents, anything jump out at you, all these sub-categories?
It all did. You know, it's also interesting, a Democrat told me this week that in that poll, Feingold had 90% of Dems behind him and was winning with independents. It's only up by 2 points. That's really unusual in a presidential cycle, but maybe we are in like a weird time in Wisconsin politics.
Absolutely.
I've never seen a race like this. I doubt I'll see one again. So it's kind of like, I'm not sure what to think sometimes about what's going on.
Okay, new subject. Federal Judge James Peterson is not much impressed with DMV's ability to tell voters how to get, if you don't have a photo ID, how to get the credentials to vote. He said this week, he said it early, there is still a real failure to communicate in simple terms what you need to do to get an ID if you don't have a birth certificate. This isn't really rocket level science stuff here. So you want to summarize what he ordered?
Basically, you've got to reach out to these folks with more information, clearer information, more clearly presented information, because in this kind of investigation that this group undertook, they went to these DMV offices and people got conflicting and incorrect information. Now,
incomplete, incorrect.
DOJ said, hey, we fixed these issues, but Peterson wasn't impressed. And he's basically said at one point in the hearings that, okay, you guys only fix things when there's a court hearing coming up. We need to get this taken care of. Now, the interesting caveat here, or look ahead, I should say, is that Peterson did not throw out the voter ID law.
He said he couldn't. And
yes.
That's because, I think, because he's bound by decisions of the circuit court.
Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago.
Yes.
What he did, though, was tee an appeal up after this election and go back and appeal it. And that's what, you know, the One Wisconsin Institute folks, I am fairly confident, that they will file another lawsuit or an appeal of this case or whatever it's going to be that says this should be thrown out. Now, look, trying to project what the Seventh Circuit would do at this current composition, the Supreme Court, what they have, I mean, it was a 5-4 ruling that the Supreme Court upheld the Indiana law several years ago. Where we're going forward, I have no idea, but I can bet you money that they will file another lawsuit before this is all over.
And the lawyer for One Wisconsin Now, which filed the lawsuit, is very satisfied with Judge Peterson's outrage at WisDOT's lack of progress.
Peterson said, I can't throw out the voter ID law, but the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is right down the street. If you want to go do it, if you want to file that appeal, you go right ahead.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just spend a minute to honor the late Senator, GOP Senator Rick Gudex, who died this week. Let's note that he served the 18th Senate District from 2013 to 2016. Before that, he served on the Final Act City Council, and before that, he was mayor of Mayville. I spoke with Mark Hogan, who's the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, on which Senator Gudex served, and he said he always brought a business perspective that Mr. Hogan respected to that. So we offer our condolences to his family. Any PSs on Rick?
Just very sad. Sad situation, stunned,
yes.
Only 48 years old. Just nobody I've talked to saw this coming, and just it's been kind of a moment of pause, if you will, in the Capitol after hearing the news.
Really have. Okay, time for stock picks.
So we have Obamacare rates rising. Interesting note this week.
Rising is normally a good thing.
Yeah,
not
so much. Well, it's a 16% increase on average for about 224,000 people out of the 6 million states. We're not talking about the overwhelming number of people in Wisconsin getting hit by this, but it is an issue for them. It is also factoring into ads that Ron Johnson's running this week, hitting buying gold on Obamacare. One features a nurse who said she had to go from part-time to full-time just to afford her health care. That's going to be an issue. You also have the governor of Minnesota saying it's no longer an affordable program.
Democratic Governor Dayton, who had embraced and rushed right into.
Bill Clinton having a little gaffe a week or so ago saying this thing is crazy. The political upshot is we are going to see this being a closing argument for Ron Johnson against Russ Feingold, that he not only was the deciding vote for Obamacare in 2010 or 9, whenever it was they passed it, but he also was proud of that vote. And we're going to make him kind of pay for it, if you will. Feingold, meanwhile, will be talking about the Ronald Donald Show quite a bit in the next 3 weeks. I promise you that.
Yeah. Well, okay. I want to stay with your rising issue because it seems to me, I'm going to ask you this question. Given the fact that we are seeing major health care providers drop out of the Affordable Care Act in major states, Wisconsin's premium increase is 15.9. Now, some states, it's 30%.
Yes.
Here's my question. Does this lay the groundwork for Governor Scott Walker to say, see, I was right that we didn't set up our own marketplace?
He's been saying that already. So he doesn't need this. He's been saying that already.
Yeah, but is it going to help him if he seeks a third term 2 years from now?
Oh, the issue didn't hurt him in 2014. You know, they laid out why they did it. And what's interesting about that is if you do polls about expanding Medicare to cover more people, it's popular. But Republicans smartly turned that issue around and said they want to expand not Medicare, but expand Obamacare. And they want to spend more money to do it. It became a very interesting issue in 2014. They used well to hit assembly candidates in particular who supported the expansion.
Rising ACA rates. Curious choice. Okay.
So next. The absentee ballots, we've got about 104,000 in last check, which is good. I mean, a good pace. We can't really compare it to 2012 because we didn't have the long window we have now, thanks to One Wisconsin and the lawsuit they filed going after all these election laws. So it's kind of hard to say, well, this is up compared to 4 years ago, but we're seeing a steady clip of absentee ballots.
Yep.
The problem, though, is some are coming back without the required information, the addresses.
When addresses of those who witnessed this.
Yes. Republicans
changed
campaign finance laws to require additional information on these envelopes. So you fill out your absentee ballot, you put your name and address on there, witness fills it out. Clerks are saying we're getting hundreds and sometimes, maybe even thousands of ballots are coming back without the information. What do we do? The Elections Commission staff is recommending,
which is meeting as we speak.
Yes, on the issue. They want to keep the street address, the street number, and the municipality. That should be on there at a minimum.
And they're arguing that's pretty much non-negotiable as a result of the change in state law.
And as some clerks are saying, well, if you don't give us some leeway, we've got a problem because what do? Do we go back in contact all these people and say, hey, there's a flaw, can you come in and sign this? It's a possibility of some votes being thrown out ahead of election day.
Our version of hanging chads, my
yes.
friend. Falling.
So Paul Ryan, here's the thing. Paul Ryan has a bright future ahead of him. The question is, what does this do? What does this whole Trump thing do? I mean, he made a deal with the devil, if you will, not saying that Trump's the devil, but, you know, that expression, and saying, okay, I don't really agree with this guy. I don't really like how he approaches things, but I feel compelled to support him because he's the nominee of my party. That is coming back to bite him. And the question now is, what's he going to lose? What's the staying going to be for Paul Ryan going forward? You have members of his caucus who have called him out and said,
the Freedom Caucus?
We are not happy that you've abandoned Trump. Yep. This is not a good move. He's got the kind of intellectual elite, as you, whatever you want to call them, in the conservative circles, saying, what took you so long? Why haven't you disavowed him already? Why are you still having this kind of endorsement sit there? Take it away now. And for Paul Ryan, he's looking, okay, we're kind of tied to Trump in some ways. I think he did a conference call this week and put out, or a fundraiser and put out to people that, you know, when McCain lost by his margin in 2008, they lost 20 seats, and Trump's down more than McCain was. So what's that going to mean? What are his options after Election Day? Does he come back as Speaker with a small majority? Well, that makes the conservative caucus, it amplifies their voice, makes it harder to govern.
Yes.
Is he in the minority? Which, if there's a Trump collapse, people have talked about, does he even, the possibility even raised, leave Congress? Say, you know what, this is not for me. He's expressed frustration with having to try to govern in a split power situation. It's no fun. He wants to put ideas in place. He's not getting that done. And going forward to 2020, if Paul Ryan wants to run for president, and again, assuming that Trump is not going to win, assuming the polls are right, if Paul Ryan wants to run for president, who is going to hold what against him? Will the Trump folks say, you weren't with us, so I can't support you? Will the kind of establishment class say, you didn't go far enough, we can't support you? He's in a very tight position right now. But when I talked to somebody who is a big Ryan backer, told me that this whole thing, all what's going on right now, is about Paul Ryan's conscience. So he can sleep at night. He can look himself in the mirror and say, I did what I thought was right, what's best for my caucus. And that's why he's at where he's at right now.
Well, but also, he's been a very effective fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
You reported he raised $48 million for his
since
fellow
the beginning
House
of the
Republicans,
year. Yeah.
Transferred $31 million of that to the House Republican campaign machine.
Has $10 million in his own campaign account.
Right. And that is, and his opponent, Democratic Ryan Saleen, has like 18.
I'm not sure. I haven't checked the latest one yet.
Pocket change. I want to ask you about one more thing. Robert Costa's story, The Washington Post, saying that a President Clinton and a Speaker Ryan could get along on things, may strike some type of a deal, incurring the wrath of the Freedom Caucus.
That's right. How would that govern?
Right. And do you see that potentially?
That's an excellent question, especially with how would he get things through with that Freedom Caucus. Would they, you know, somebody pointed out in a story this morning, I read that each of the last five or six speakers who have left have not left on their own accord. They've been forced out.
Yeah.
It's not a long-term job anymore.
Right.
So what happens? Is he able to manage that caucus? Again, we're talking hypotheticals here, but it's all, can he do this? Can he pull this off if you have a small majority? If you have a President Clinton, will the caucus allow you to compromise? Or will they say, no, you know what we're going to do? We're going to dig in. We're going to win back those seats in 2018. The inevitable snap back against the party in power in the White House. And then 2020 is our time to take the White House and fix all of this.
One more question on this. Why has Mr. Ryan been so, he's chosen to be so much more proactive. I'm not going to campaign with Trump. I'm going to focus on reelecting my members. In contrast to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who will not even say the T word, Trump.
Again,
so, a different choice in leadership styles in this crucible.
Comes back to Paul Ryan's conscience.
Paul Ryan's conscience.
Yeah.
Okay, fascinating. Okay, because we are a full service rewind, JR, I've got a question for you. Number of black bears killed in the recent season in Wisconsin that just ended?
Not sure.
Okay, full service. 4,643. Off the record, 5,000 black bears killed in 2010. And a DNR official says you have more chance to legally hunt black bears in Wisconsin than any other state. We're a full-service show.
Did not know that.
Yeah. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 14th.